stay tuned, all you loyal listeners. It's a little bit late for this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on August 2nd, 2001. But hey, hopefully better late than not at all. Welcome, all you patient listeners, to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Traffic coming back from the south was incredible. It took me about an hour and a half to negotiate an area that normally takes half an hour. So my apologies for not being here at 6 o'clock. The show normally goes from 6 to 8. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. All the fucking news all the time, at least as much of the time as we can give it to you, and the news you don't normally get on corporate radio or a vanilla so-called public radio, which generally excludes the public. We, on the other hand, include the public, and we invite you to call in during the show, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and comment whatever your thoughts are on what you hear. This is a show about civil rights for folks on the streets and civil rights for all of us, really, but we are focusing on folks outside. We've been doing a lot of talking about Camp Paradise, the clean and sober campground, 30 to 40 people, I guess it's growing, down by the San Lorenzo River right off Felker Street near Denny's. It's been warned by the police to get moving, but the latest story in the Sentinel, and there were several, Monday there was a long front page column with some nice photos, and the next day there was a nasty, but not as nasty as they used to be, editorial from the Sentinel, the local monopoly newspaper. I call it the Sent-anal for obvious reasons, talking about Camp Paradise, and of course not mentioning the really salient facts that there are 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz alone who have less than 40, well, shelter beds is not the way to put it, floor spaces with mats on church floors during the summer. And I think it's about 160 in the winter for the same number of people, if not more. It's particularly disgraceful because of the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban. It's a section of the camping ordinance which criminalizes actually the act of falling asleep after 11 o'clock at night, with or without bedding, on public and much private property. The exceptions are a fenced-in side yard, which you're not visible from the street on, or a backyard. In even many structures, it's illegal to sleep in a restaurant, it's illegal to sleep in a theater, it's illegal to sleep in any structure except a domicile. It's a $54 fine. But worse, the consequences of criminalizing homeless people defending themselves, sleeping together, forming small communities, is that they are denied basic protections. They are subject to troll buster assaults, they are subject to problems with accidents, whether it's drug overdoses or just plain accidents that happen because they can't support each other. And they're atomized, something I've heard that has happened up in Eugene, where there has been, to some extent, an improvement in some of the laws, but the city has also, along the way, isolated and fragmented the homeless rights movement. And we may be hopefully hearing an interview on that later tonight. Because of my hustle to get back to the radio station and inability to get in touch with a couple people, as well as review tapes more thoroughly, I'm kind of playing it, by ear, winging it, as I often do here on the air. And I've been hoping to play for folks two interviews from the NASNA conference. That's NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association. Conference that happened last weekend in San Francisco, happens once a year. All the street publications, Street Spirit from San Francisco, Real Change from Seattle, Street Light from San Diego, papers from across the country and across Canada, and even some from out of the country, attend NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association, and they kind of share stories, talk about mutual concerns, such as harassment of their vendors, such as the deterioration of the civil rights situation for homeless people. It was hosted this year by the Coalition on Homelessness, which is a really activist group up in San Francisco that publishes the newspaper Street Sheet. We don't get as much Street Sheet around here as we do Street Spirits. Actually, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization that I belong to, vends Street Spirits. And anybody out there who wants to sell Street Spirits who's homeless or nearly homeless can do so. You get 10 issues free, and you sell them for $1 apiece, keep all the profits, and the next 10 issues cost you a dime apiece. And you get to sell them for $1. That's, 1,000% profit. Not bad, and a lot of people do it downtown, or I should say a number of people do. The August issue will be out tomorrow evening, I believe, and it'll have a new story on Camp Paradise in it, for those of you who are interested in that situation. A story by Becky Johnson with assistance from me. Becky rushed to get a deadline met and was successful in doing that, and we got that story up to editor Terry Messman, and it should be out, as I said, if I can get the papers tomorrow and bring them back down here from San Francisco tomorrow evening on the streets. You can also pick up the paper at the Homeless Services Center on Coral Street or at Page Smith Community House, so we usually leave some papers over there, plus at Carl Wilson's house on Felker Street for all you Camp Paradise folks. He has been generous enough to offer to distribute them, and that's at 137 Felker. Becky Johnson also is a vendor distributor, and you can get in touch with her by calling her in the phone book. She's the only Becky Johnson in the book, and she's at 429-8529. Give her a call if you want to sell Street Spirit. Her place is located right off Highway 1 down there near Camp Paradise, actually, a couple blocks away. So a lot of options for folks who want to sell street papers, at least in terms of getting copies of that paper. You can also call me at Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And it may take me a day or two and a couple of false starts, but I'll try to get papers to you if I can. I also have copies of last month's paper, which was a very popular issue. There was a long story on Camp Paradise, again, mainly by Becky Johnson, with additions from me. And it's a good story. I recommend it. And I'm glad that the story is hitting our so-called mainstream media. I'm also hopeful that we can get an update from Camp Paradise tonight. We're going to call down there and see what we can find. There hasn't been much very good phone contact. If you've seen the Metro ad, last Metro, there was a very good full-page, a week ago Metro, I should say, full-page ad with a little girl holding a sign, Save Camp Paradise, and there was a phone number on there that's the cell phone for Larry Templeton, who's one of the founders of Camp Paradise. And I haven't been able to reach him on that phone, unfortunately, and I'm hoping that other people have been more successful. There's also an email site for Camp Paradise, campparadise@hotmail.com, one word, all small letters, Camp Paradise. So you have numerous ways to get in touch with them. As far as I know, though the police did visit them a couple of days ago, was the report I got, they were not as yet ticketed or even clearly threatened with tickets that I was aware of. I haven't heard anything about that, though I continue to advise people down there who are in the campground, and perhaps it's presumptuous of me, but I've seen campgrounds come and go, and I'm afraid this one is no real exception, because the city, even though Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, or Mayor Fitzmaurice, if you prefer that title, has said it's not his highest priority to go after the camp. He said this in letters to Ruth Hunter and to Sherry Connable, which I read yesterday or the day before in the mayor's correspondence file at City Hall. It's open to the public in case you want to go down there at 809 Center Street and take a look at what the mayor has been writing about responding to people concerned about this issue. Lots of people have written into Camp Paradise about Camp Paradise to City Hall saying, leave these folks alone. They've cleaned up the river. They've cleaned up their act. They have no other place to go. I mean, what are you guys, crazy? What the hell is your problem? And the city has reacted initially with more threats and with more nonsense from the vice police chief, Jeff Locke. And even in the most recent Monday Sentinel story, the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, who's the real power in the city in terms of any orders to the police department or controls over the staff. He hires and fires the police chief, and there's no control on his behavior from city council that I've seen, even under this so-called wonderful new Fitzmaurice crone, liberals, giddy left-wing council. It isn't that at all, of course. It's posing as that so it can keep its electoral support. In fact, well, the only good thing I've seen them do recently is they did something negative. They stopped the Brommer Broadway bike path, which, I have taken a lot of the word of Scott Graham, Scope It Out Scott, as I call him, a city council watcher who was concerned that opening up this area to a bike path would essentially allow the police to have emergency vehicles there so they could harass campers, and that there is also an alternate path that's been talked about and actually money appropriated for along the railroad, along the East Cliff. I believe that's the street. Maybe it's not East Cliff, but it's the railroad right along near the ocean, and that's a better place for that bike path to go. And indeed, there was some direct action done around bike paths, I guess, a couple days ago, mentioned in the Sent Anal, in terms of painting in lanes. Direct action. That's what we need around the sleeping ban, folks, and perhaps that's what we're going to get. There was a meeting. Before I lose my train of thought, I think I almost lost it here. Talking about some interviews coming up that we're going to be playing later in the show, NASNA interviews, North American Street Newspaper Association interviews, which have to do with tent cities up in Portland. One's called Dignity Village up there. It's been going for 8 or 9 months now. We interviewed Jack Tafari. I'm hoping to find that interview as I Scan My Tapes, and also an interview with the Share Tent City, which has been going for even longer, about a year, up in Seattle, Washington. And I'd like to see some of these folks come down and give their thoughts to Camp Paradise, and not just Camp Paradise, but to people who would like to do what Camp Paradise is doing, would like to be able to shelter themselves, who would like to be able to set up low-income camp areas and do what they need to do to survive. That is to say, shelter their families, provide a place where they can store stuff while they go to work and earn a living, as apparently most people do at Camp Paradise, and many of the homeless people do in our community. So I would like to see that happen. I'm hoping that, the discussion of Camp, these other two tent cities, one being Dignity Village, the other being Shares Tent City up in Seattle, will be helpful. And I'm hoping to get these folks down, and at least if we don't get them down, we got a couple interviews here that hopefully will be useful. I'd like to point out that we met, some of us, day before yesterday, Wednesday morning, in I guess what became a HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Started out as a homeless working group meeting, but the main man of the homeless working group, Michael Schmidt, was unable to show, and he actually called me afterwards, and he apologized. He said he was going to make the next meeting, and he was all set to do that. And the next meeting will be Wednesday, 8:30 in the morning at the that trusty old Baker's Square next week. I'm probably going to try to meet with Schmidt before then to kind of brief him, and if I can, I'll let people know about that meeting too. No time has been set, and I'm off to San Francisco tonight to pick up the Street Spirits and come back tomorrow at some point. So I'm kind of running around. What I'm going to do now, actually to stall for a little time, is play you the protest that happened at the NASNA conference against the San Francisco Chronicle, and that is sort of the San Francisco version of the Santa Cruz Scent Anal, or Resentinal, or the Urinal, whatever you want to call it, the Senile, some call it. It's our local paper that, their local paper, actually, that we get to pay 50 cents for, and occasionally you can look at it online, I guess, free, much of it, if you have a computer and you have that kind of access. The Chronicle has been headlining stories that stereotype homeless people. And a couple weeks ago, I read the NASNA's new guidelines that demand that homeless people and homeless stories be covered in a fair, non-prejudicial way. And a lot of us went down to the Sentinel on Saturday afternoon to do that, got a meeting set up with the editor finally. A couple of us went in the building and refused to leave. That was me and another guy. And we did get a meeting scheduled, and we actually did leave, but, you know, we said, okay. And now they're kind of fudging on the meeting, but we're still hoping to press forward to that issue. But I'm going to play a bit of that while I prepare some other tapes. In case you want to call in, I will be keeping my eye on the phone line, 427-3772. Give a call in. My apologies to Jill Butler, who was supposed to be on the air today. I didn't get back to our rendezvous point in time. I was 25 minutes late in time to be able to escort her to the studio. So, Jill, give a call in. We'll try to do some talk by phone, and if that doesn't work, we'll try to do some talk on Sunday when the show returns at 11 o'clock in the morning. 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon is our Sunday time, and we'll take it from there. Here's a little bit from the NASNA protest in San Francisco on Saturday.
It's about 6:35, and we're coming down Mission, heading for the Chronicle building, 5th Street, where a protest is about to begin, or should be reaching the Chronicle building soon, around street newspapers and the right not to be maligned against stereotyping homeless people.
Okay, next up we're going to hear from... Speaks.
Louder!
I'll try to make this thing work. I want everybody to hear me because I'm homeless. I don't like it. And I don't like people telling me that I'm homeless just because I want to be. I don't like being homeless.
Yeah.
How many of you remember back in the days of Vietnam War? How many of you remember how many stories that politicians, the children of politicians, Did they tell you that all those people that were then going to war were only going to war because they wanted to go to war?
No.
Is that what you heard?
No.
No, but you heard how many times that the kids and those that could afford it could get accepted, right?
Right.
Well, how many people do you hear out there that are having difficult times living their lives, but they get exemption? They don't end up out here on the street. But you see us out here on the street, we're not afforded the exemptions and the assistance that we need. We're not out here because we want to. We're out here because we're forced out here, being left abandoned. We're abandoned by our families. We're abandoned by our community. We're abandoned by our politicians that are saying they're out there going to support us and help us. And then they get into office and they change their mind. We're not out here because we want to. We're not out here because we enjoy having to look for a bathroom that we can't find. We're not out here because we're out here enjoying not being able to rest comfortably and safe at night, always vulnerable to the elements, always vulnerable to the cops kicking us awake and telling us to move on. We're not comfortable out here. We're not out here because we want to be. And I'm only saying that over and over again. I want to only add one more thing. And I want you to remember one thing. Is there any of you ever think that you're going to tell us that we're out here because we want to be? Do you hear that from your children?
No.
Do any of you have any children that are telling you that they want to grow up to be homeless?
No.
If you cannot imagine your children telling you that they want to grow up to be homeless out here on the street, then how can you sit there and tell us that we want to be out here just because we want to be?
That was Samantha from Austin,
ladies and gentlemen, we're
going to Texas.
Move this right along. We have Anthony that's going to come up and he's going to speak to us.
Hello, my name is Anthony Williams from New York City. I want to talk to you about the homeless. People with dignity, pride, and self-respect, and a lot of strength. Strength to maintain on the streets, strength to maintain in the subways, and strength to maintain anywhere in this country. The most important piece here is you're talking about people with dignity and respect and power. The street news movement is very strong in this country. We need a movement like that to support those who cannot support themselves and stand strong.
All right.
The reason why we're here is because we want people to organize themselves and be strong within themselves. This is why the paper is so important. If the media doesn't listen to us, then we have to do it ourselves. The best way we know how and the best way we can. And that's very important for street news and all the papers across the country. So be strong, support the homeless, and remember, pride and dignity.
All right.
All right, everybody. So what we're going to do is we're going to go someplace where the people inside the Chronicle can hear what we're talking about.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we got a couple of chants here that we're going to try to go through right now. We got to head out. And it goes something like, Chronicle, Chronicle, we won't rest till you cover our protest. Okay, let's go in there.
Chronicle, Chronicle, we won't rest till you cover our protest. Chronicle, Chronicle, we won't rest till you cover our protest.
And we're strolling down the Market Street in Powell. Brian is talking to a woman with a cow head on. I'm not sure what's going on here.
One more time. Toronto, we will rest.
It looks like a a pretty sizable crowd here. How many people would you estimate are in the crowd?
Oh, I hadn't looked. At least 100.
At least 100, maybe more, yes.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, listening to the NASNA protests last Saturday at the Chronicle Building.
We covered our protest. Still relatively early in the day, so long summer days here in San Francisco. And the streets are very crowded Saturday evening. Lots of... Brian, you're from Ohio?
Yes.
And what do you make of this protest?
We have the same problems in Cleveland, where the plane dealer won't cover our stories.
And what do you do to resolve that problem?
We've actually also had a protest in front of their offices with a... We all brought toilet brushes because they said that mentally ill people should be scrubbing the toilets in the shelters.
And that got some media?
That got some media, yes.
Excellent. And now, of course, your front page coverage in the Cleveland, was it called
The plane dealer still doesn't cover us, but at least the other media covered that story.
So it's more like the plane healer rather than the plane dealer.
Yeah, it's a bad paper. That's the results of one newspaper town.
Another one newspaper town. Thank you.
Well, where are you from?
San Jose, where I grew up.
Oh, really? And how do they treat the homeless in San Jose?
I went to college there, and I pretty much hit out while I was in college. I was homeless, and we had a camp, and they come down and kick you off the camp, take all your personal belongings away. Make you stay on the move, don't give you a chance to get a good night's sleep at night. Makes it hard when you're a student, you don't have any money, you can't get a good night's sleep and buy books, but they don't care about all that, that you're trying to better yourself. They just want you to go someplace else.
What's your name?
Mark King.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
What's your name, sir?
Tom Boland.
Tom, where are you from?
Boston, Massachusetts.
What brings you to this neck of the woods, and what do you think of this kind of protest?
I think the corporate media is helping the domination of the civic agenda by the financial elite, and I want to protest that because too many people have jackboots on their back, too many people are in prison, too many people can't afford rent even when they're working, and so I'm here to call the Chronicle on its lies. I call it the Chronic Lie.
Chronic Lie, very good. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
They don't want it on TV. Homelessness. Homelessness. They don't want it on TV. Homelessness.
And where are you from?
I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Oh my goodness. And what brings you here? And what is this the kind of thing you do in Portland?
This is the kind of thing we do in Portland. We are all about some civil disobedience.
Really? When's the last protest you were in up there?
The last protest I was in up there was recently about the Genoa meetings in Italy and the death of the young protester in Italy. That was about a week ago.
And how many people showed up for that?
I would say about 200 to 300 people were there, and that's a fairly small protest, but it was good to see a showing.
How about the police? Did they show up? I see
the police were there on motorcycles, bicycles, horse patrol, foot patrol, and car patrol.
Well, it sounds like you were well protected.
Yes, oh yes, we were. They had our safety in mind, I'm sure.
Anything about homeless protests in Portland you want to tell us about?
I'm sure you've heard about Dignity Village, which is the homeless camp in Portland. That began a year ago as an act of civil disobedience. And we've been lucky enough to live in a city that has finally realized that there's nothing wrong with homeless people helping themselves and has decided to adopt it. So that was a successful piece of civil disobedience in Portland.
And your name is?
Jacosi.
Thank you, Jacosi.
You're welcome. Thank you.
What's your name?
My name is Chris Grass.
Chris, and Chris, where are you from?
I'm from San Francisco.
Aren't you one of those notorious foods for bummers we've heard so much about?
This is true. This
or
is
bummer
true.
Fooders, or whatever it is. Food, not bomb.
Food for World Revolution.
We're here at 901 Mission now in front of the Chronicle. We don't see anybody out to greet us yet, though.
Chronicle, we will rest till you cover our protest.
Corporate media on the attack.
What do we do?
We fight back!
For free media on the attack. What do we do?
We fight back!
Chronicle, we won't rest.
We cover our
protest. Chronicle, we have to allow access for pedestrian traffic on this side, because people are going to have to start walking into the street.
What do we do?
So, Sergeant Berkeley speaking.
Yeah. Okay.
If you just take, you know, just advise people to allow, leave a space for people to walk.
Ignore
the sergeant. Will she ignore the sergeant? That's the question.
Just for this moment, when we're in front of the Chronicle. But also, if you guys could leave a lane for people to walk by and move up. I don't understand why we're leaving this big space in front of the Chronicle. Let's get up as close as we can.
Yeah!
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 So, anyway, make sure you make room for people to pass, so we don't want any problems there, but...
So we have, it looks like, at least four police officers who are on the periphery. And you, sir, you're from out of the country, aren't you?
What?
What is your name?
Eric Simon.
And you're from Canada?
I'm from Quebec, Montreal.
Do Canadians behave this way by having newspapers smear protesters and stereotype homeless people? Not in Canada, right?
Well, in Quebec, we have a way of making sure that the pressure and the paper are more progressive than they are here, that's for sure.
How do you do that?
Well, I don't know. It's the system. There's a lot of changes in mentality to change here. You know, money is something, but doesn't have to rule. And I think that's what America is all about right now, is what money rules, and we have to change that.
Now, do you have more than one paper in Montreal?
Yeah, we do have a lot of papers, and, you know, nobody has the guts of saying something like that about homelessness or treat them as they were nice, decent human beings. And we take that as a flaw of the system and not like some people who were having major problem with drugs or whatever. They're a human being and need to be respected.
Thank you very much. Your name again is?
Eric Simon.
And you are with?
L'Itinéraire. I'm in Montreal.
Thank you. So, you are the winner?
I'm the winner.
Of the vendor.
Yeah, nobody came even close to me.
How many papers did you say?
63, I had 70 papers.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
All right. That means you come to the next NASNA conference.
Yes. Yes, that's great, isn't it?
Let's hope it's worth it. So it looks like the crowd of... Oh, I don't know. It's about, 100? Who's good at estimating crowds? You good at estimating crowds? How many people would you estimate here? 100, 150, what?
I'd say 100 to 150. Yeah, I'd say that.
And what is your name?
My name is Mark Goldfinger.
Why are you allowing these people to do this kind of protest? This is our Chronicle in our city. How can you do this?
Well, we feel that they're misrepresenting the homeless community. And we're accusing them of crimes against humanity.
The Chronicle?
The Chronicle. Because the first thing you do is feed the public misinformation, demonize a certain class of people or a certain race of people, and then anything can happen. It happened in Germany. It could happen here. Thank you.
Science here, flyer, homelessness. I better get some glasses. There's a sign with a television that says live. Hey, what's your name?
Henry Kroll from San Francisco.
Oh, you're a local man.
Right.
Did you come to support the Chronicle?
Well, the Chronicle is sadly misguided and misdirected, and what we need is a whole restructuring of the media in the United States so it serves the interests of the people as the founders of our democratic nation designed.
Let me grab this one.
You're listening to Management Protest. What's your name? Chronicle last Saturday.
My name is Carrie Levenberg. And where are you from?
I'm here from San Francisco.
And what do you think of this?
Find this really, like, it's really fascinating. It's really interesting to be targeting the corporate media with a protest that doesn't happen very often. I think it's really important, and I hope it's the beginning of a trend.
Thank you.
Here's the winner of the vending vendoff.
Hi there, everybody. I'll never be undefeated. When I sell the paper, I sell the paper.
The vendoff was an event where an event where there was a contest to see who could sell the most street newspapers in the shortest amount of time, and the winner won a free all-expense-paid trip to the next NASNA conference, which I think will be somewhere on the East Coast in a year, and she's now speaking about that.
Show the real scene, universallivingwage.org, and has various pictures of police officers approaching homeless people, and somehow, what are they doing with those homeless people, those photos, you know? Can you describe what's happening in those photos?
I was on 16th and Mission, and I happened to have my camera, and I saw these police come out of their car and start questioning the homeless folks, and I guess they were running their name, and the woman was just sitting there, and they happened to come up to her and started to do like a shakedown of her, and so I recorded that.
And then your name is?
Catalina.
And you're from?
Providence, Rhode Island.
All the way from Providence to bring truth to San Francisco.
Yes.
And Santa Cruz.
You got it.
Thank you.
Committed in this city, but they're not being committed by homeless people. They're being committed inside this building.
Whoa! Where are you from?
Iran.
Iran, are you with the media? You're just a free human being. What do you think of this protest?
I love it.
Thank you. Now, Donald of the Coalition on Homelessness, or I should say the NASNA Coalition, speaking.
Everybody, we represent a lot of different places. We represent a lot of different cities. We all represent homeless people, and the issues are all the same. We live in the richest country in the world. In the richest country in the world, people sleep outside, under bridges, in abandoned buildings, and in abandoned cars. That is not acceptable. In the richest country in the world, 3.5 million people are homeless. 1.35 million of those people are children. That is not acceptable. In the United States of America, the richest country in the world, homeless people are depicted as villains, as vagrants, as all kinds of criminals, and because of that, 92 homeless people have lost their lives in the last 2 years. People have been beheaded, people have been drowned, people have been firebombed. It's a direct result of how homeless people are depicted in the media, and I say today, and I hope you say with me one time, America is a tribune. That is not acceptable. That is not acceptable.
That is not acceptable.
This is the United States of America, and the one thing we're doing here, I want to accuse, just like in other countries, we accuse other countries of crimes against humanity. I would like to accuse the San Francisco Chronicle and the city of San Francisco of crimes against humanity. Of the population is demonized like it's being done here. It is a crime. It started
starts with misinformation in the media, the corporate media, misinforms the people, become afraid, and then...
What did they say?
You just talked to several people in a car. What did they say to you?
They just sort of looked puzzled, like, duh, what are y'all doing? But they did take the newspaper and said thank you.
And your name is?
Flora Hogan, Endless Choices.
And where is that from?
Dallas, Texas.
Where's your accent, Dallas?
South Louisiana.
Okay, then.
Je parle français.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And where are you from?
San Francisco.
And you are an observer, a participant, a little of both?
Both.
What do you make of the protest?
It's small but important.
Thank you.
The city's beautiful itself, but the people, and not just the newspaper, the people and themselves at the same time treat each other with humanity, as if they don't love each other or they're alienated from the city. And I just like to say we should start loving each other more as people, and we'll all come together. And I believe even the Chronicle itself will start to see our love, and they'll spread our love. Thank you.
Okay, you know, it seems to me that it's not a hard thing for the reporters of the Chronicle to get a story and then check that story out before they publish it. You know, I mean, they're supposed to be spreading the truth and letting us know what's going on in the city. But they tell us what they want us to know, and then they go on from there, and that's not right. But I have Rachel up here that's going to speak next, and Rachel, talk about your organization.
I'm with the Every Mother, the Working Mothers Network, and the U.S. Prostitutes Collective. And we're here, we picketed the Chronicle because of the disgusting coverage they do of poor people, of prostitute women, of women on welfare. And I'm an ex-welfare mother, and I'm sick of the media calling me a scrounger. They say we don't do anything. We sit around at home and work and do nothing. But I want to say that as women, we work. We work. Taking care of kids is hard work. And our organization says that welfare should be a right. It shouldn't be treated as a charity. It's an entitlement for the work we do, taking care of our kids. And what is welfare reform? What is the media saying about welfare reform? It's no wage work recruitment. It's forcing us into low-wage shit jobs. And that's what welfare reform is, not what the media says about it.
You're here.
That's here for Rachel. Okay, let's just do one more chant again before we get back into our next speaker. Our next speaker is going to be Daryl Burton here. Daryl Mason here. And before that, though, I love this. Chronicle, we won't rest.
We never all forget.
I see science scenes come and go. I've seen Art Echo. I've seen the other guy, what's his name?
Jordan.
Frank Jordan. He beat up the homeless in Duncan Park with that thing he had.
The Matrix.
Here we had Bill Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton cared more about the blacks and the poor more than all the presidents. Did you know that Bill Clinton was the very best president we ever had? Now we got the worst president. During Bill Clinton's presidency, our economy and our job was the best in all the country.
So there's some signs suddenly going up, expose the Chronicle's lies about the homeless. Uh-oh, police officer's coming through. Cop coming through. Watch out. And Terry is posting a sign. Homelessness is not just for poor people anymore. Expose the Chronicle's lies. Here's it. Sunglasses and
I get the Chronicle
signs.
Every Sunday comes to my house. The
San Francisco Chronicle lies. Expose the Chronicle's lies about the homeless. The city has a strong mayor.
Another advertising supplement, and the good guys and the Home Depot and the Nordstrom people and the Macy's and the big and bad and suckers. It is what's going on in the interest. And then I go
as I go and I buy my
I think the Chronicle is defacing the town itself.
And I wonder whether that is anything to do with the fact.
2 minutes, and you're listening to a rather fragmented account of the NASNA protest, North American Street Newspaper Association protest, at the San Francisco Chronicle on Saturday, about a week ago. And the point we reached in the protest is where people began to wheat paste up or adhesive up posters to the door of the Chronicle. Spokespeople from the Chronicle refused to come out and talk to the folks on the sidewalk about the very negative media campaign being waged by the Chronicle against homeless people in San Francisco for the last, well, for a long period of time, but it's kind of stepped up recently. And that police came through the crowd, began to protect the door of the Chronicle, and threatened people that if they did any further posting, they would be arrested. And the protest then moved around to the side of the other side of the Chronicle, where a door was left open, and a number of us went inside. Let's hear.
Jack has pointed out, but. You know, getting a single bank to take homeless deposits, wouldn't it be more effective to get legislation?
Confusion on the tape here. Bear with us, folks.
And the Chronicle, I find nothing.
People are putting up signs.
And the only time we get any truth in it, and it looks like we've
tried. Police have arrived. It's about 7:10. And the sergeant is walking on some of the San Francisco Chronicle signs. Police officer is sort of moving forward here. Police officer has pulled off his baton.
His baton.
Advise you not to put any papers on the building, okay? Who are you?
Police officer announcing
police
you can't
officer.
Post things on the building.
So we're moving in front of 901 Mission Street after they're about, it's like 10 or 15. It's like the adhesive isn't holding too well. They're pulling them off the building.
Police officers are pulling them off the placards which denounce the Chronicle's lies and negative treatment of homeless. Several vehicles have pulled up on the street and the police reinforced themselves. Like there were six or seven of them now, originally two or three.
Corporate media on the attack. What do we do?
We fight back. Corporate media, we piss, no shit, we hate the corporate media.
Tune in, space out, don't think it's one of the signs here. And here's a vendor from San Diego apparently recording and selling streetlights.
Well, actually I'm just milling around here and seeing what happens. But it's obviously a well-deserved protest.
Yeah. I would agree, although, yeah, I can think of a number of examples offhand of the Chronicle's distortions. No question about it. I'd like one of those. Thank you. So it looks like there are four police officers guarding the window doors of the Chronicle, and a couple of others. But the paddy wagon is kind of pulled away. Chance Martin is holding a sign, "No real news is bad news for America." What do you mean by that?
By what?
The sign you're holding.
What does it say?
Well, I tried to read it, but I've been watching too much television. Oh, it's a television. Oh, I can look at it for a while. Hang on.
Well, I went to American public schools, so I'm the kind of person that the Chronicle is written for. You know, I can't track a story from one day to the next. I'll believe anything that you feed me. I'll just sit here and be happy and buy all that shit from Nordstrom's that they advertise in there.
Work
and
harder.
All that shit from, and I'll think that I'm informed.
Well, what's wrong with that?
I'm sorry?
Never mind.
So we now control the strategic bus stop. The question is, what can we do with a bus stop? I don't know.
I can't sleep on it anymore.
I would be willing to sleep on it, only with the right people.
Yeah, well, they're putting up those bars to keep us from sleeping on it.
On the bus stop?
Yes.
Really?
They put up bars inside the instead of the seats, or they put those little tiny happy seats, so you can't lay on it. That's why they do it, is to offend and repel homeless people.
Well, I knew there was a good reason for it.
Yes, yeah.
Just a month earlier, when Idris Deli was shot and killed by 8 police officers and multiple 26 bullets down at the Metreon right over.
And other groups are using the rally to publicize upcoming protests against police misconduct. Early this month in San Francisco, there's a similar protest coming up, another protest, I should say, against police misconduct. There's actually a protest against the Santa Cruz Sentinel coming up. I think it's either the 7th or the 8th of August. Perhaps a listener will call in and give us the exact time of that upcoming Sentinel protest, where folks will be encouraged to come to the Sentinel in mass and let them know what they think of their coverage of various issues, ranging from homelessness to lack of any critical oversight of the police department to, I would be concerned about their coverage of the destruction of the Latino community in the Beach Flats area. But anyway, that's going to be happening. If you have any questions about this, I don't have the specific times of this protest, but stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to. You get more information on this and as these events develop, and also you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I'll specifically get you that information and get back to you. Call in if you'd like. We have a call-in number, and we're eager to get callers even as the show is progressing. You're listening to the Saturday, a week ago Saturday's NASNA protest against the San Francisco Chronicle.
We know that. I just want to speak to her.
And now we're inside the Chronicle building, myself and editor Terry Messman. Everyone else has been locked outside. Just the two of us are there. I am in my bathroom wanting to talk to a Chronicle reporter or editor. Police are telling us to leave.
I'm not in control here. I'm just asking him to get us a reporter. Are you going to ask to get us a reporter, please?
And our strategy is to say we're simply talking, trying to speak to a reporter for the... And we kind of befuddled the police, who, instead of pushing us out because the doors have been open, waited for a reporter to come.
Is this guy a reporter?
And we interrupt this review of the NASNA protest with a caller. Hi, caller.
Yeah, this is John Gilkin with Santa Cruz Coalition of Primo Mia.
Mm-hmm.
We're organizing a protest against the Sentinel. It's going to be on August 8th, Wednesday, August 8th. We're going to start off at the town clock at 5:30 p.m. and we're going to march on the Sentinel building. We'll arrive there at about 6:30 p.m.
So it'll be 5:30 on Wednesday, yesterday.
Yeah, a week from yesterday.
And that'll be at 5:30, and then you'll show up at the Sentinel at which I guess is about 3 or 4 blocks from the town clock.
Right.
The Sentinel is right across from the main public library, as I remember.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's on Church Street, I believe. Church and Cedar is the address for the Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel, as some call it.
Right, and the main focus, at least for us, is that Sentinel has basically been labeling Mia Abu-Jamal a cop killer, just taking him for granted that he was guilty, and also they're not covering the latest developments, the Arnold Beverly affidavit, where Arnold Beverly came forward and confessed to killing Officer Faulkner. Apparently they haven't published anything on that, and so basically they're just, towing the corporate line on Mumia, so protesting that.
can simply show up at 5:30 next Wednesday at the town clock. Is there a number they can call or a meeting they can attend?
Yeah, there's Santa Cruz Coalition for Hemomia meets every Sunday at 5 to 7 p.m. at the Loudon Nelson Park behind Loudon Nelson Center. That's 301 Center Street in Santa Cruz. And our voicemail number is 425-4467. We actually have a couple of protests coming up. We got the Sentinel protest on the 8th. There's also going to be, because Mamiya is going to a court, going to state court on the 17th of August, there's going to be some protests to support that. In San Francisco, there's going to be a press conference at the Stand with Mamiya picket line. That's Friday, August 17th, noon to 1 p.m. at the State Building at Van Ness and McAllister in San Francisco. In Santa Cruz on the same day, there's going to be a march for Mamiya starting at the town clock. It's going to be August 17th, Friday, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. So the idea there is to basically hand out some flyers to people in front of the movie theater. We're going to march down Pacific Avenue from the town clock. And then the next day, Saturday, August 18th, there's going to be a carpool from Santa Cruz. We'll assemble there about 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning at the town clock and hope to arrive in San Francisco by the time it's supposed to be for the protest is 12 noon to 2 p.m. That's going to be Powell and Market Street in San Francisco. That's on Saturday, August 18th. And basically the strategy of the legal team is doing is they're requesting a new post-conviction relief act hearing at the state level. Basically, Mamiya may be out of luck at the federal level since Judge John has recently ruled that the new evidence, including the Arnold Beverly affidavit, at least that part of it, is not admissible because basically it's because of the Effective Death Penalty Act has a time limit of 1 year for introducing new evidence when the, I guess the clock starts as soon as you're at the appellate level in the federal court, and then the clock runs out 1 year later, and after that you can't introduce any more new evidence, according to Judge John and his interpretation of the Effective Death Penalty Act. So that's what's happening with Mumia.
Mm-hmm. Any word about Jim Costner? I know the United Earth and People's Liberation Organization met on Tuesday night, and there was a sort of a discussion of solidarity on the around local issues on the left, if you will, although some people objected to that phrase, and that Jim Costner, who's in jail and facing trial for smashing the statue of Christopher Columbus in San Jose City Hall, is, even though the bail was essentially paid, the DA did a fast one, and through a process I've described in the past, got an additional he actually got the charges dropped, the bail exonerated, and then a new bail required, which required another posting of bail. And I guess some folks, you're among them, are seeking to get bail again for Jim Costner?
Yeah, basically, I think we have the $1,000 that's required for the fee to roll over the bond, to issue a new bond. That part's covered, but the part that's not covered is that the person who would be putting up their house as collateral wants basically a guarantee so that they're not out the full $35,000 if Jim decides not to show up or whatever that kind of scenario happens. Basically, we're all pitching in to have some kind of a bank account where we can say that, you know, it's a joint bank account and everybody has to sign to get the money back out or something like that, and basically have it guaranteed at $35,000.
You've gotten pretty far. You got, what, $25,000 has been guaranteed?
There, yeah.
So you just need another $10,000. So
yeah.
Anybody out there with a $10,000 check, you don't have to give it away. You just have to leave it in the bank long enough to get Jim to court, and then you, I guess, you get your money back. At what point
right.
do you get your money back?
Well, you get your money back after the trial is completed.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're going through the bail bondsman, there's no liability after he's convicted or after he gets proved innocent or whatever. There was a slight issue if we post the money directly to the court that they might take statue, that part doesn't happen if you go through Bail Monument.
The Columbus statue, yeah. Well, thank you, John. So how can people contribute to the Costner Bail Fund if they want?
There was a P.O. box. I don't have it right in front of me.
Well, they can always call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll give you more information.
Right.
Listeners, if you want to, again, put some money in this account for youth simply to be held until Costner gets to court and gets his trial, which I guess
right.
is planned for September, right?
Yeah, I think it starts September 4th, which...
He's currently being held in Elmwood, and he was concerned at least a week ago, and I talked to him about possible threats by white supremacists there.
He gave me some numbers of, or actually gave me some people he wanted to have their numbers looked up in his black book, or maybe you have access to this one person's number. He was talking about Mike, who lives near Camp Paradise. He said to ask Robert or Larry Templeton for his number. And
I'll get that to you. Anything else?
No, that should basically do it. I think we might be sponsoring Vinny to go to Philadelphia if he doesn't want to do it. If anyone else who works at Free Radio wants to report on what's going on the 17th.
For Mami Abu Jamal.
Yeah, I'll be willing to sponsor them to go to Philadelphia. You know, a reasonable fee for an airplane ticket, basically about $400. Maximum for an airplane ticket to go to Philadelphia.
So you're looking for money for that purpose, or?
No, I'm offering that.
You're offering that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, so, hey, I'll just hop on a plane. And
right.
So how can people reach you if you want, you know, if they want to try to get into that sponsored position?
You can call me at 475-2757.
Wow. That sounds like a real opportunity for a reporter.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. And is there more you'd like to say? Okay.
Right.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
No, you're welcome, and thanks for giving us the news.
Okay, bye.
Arizona, member of the Coalition for the Homeless.
And you also were a participant in a camp in Tucson, Arizona many moons ago. What was it called?
It didn't have a name.
Tucson Camp Without a Name, and this was what year?
Oh, this was around 1997, 96.
So not so long ago.
No. And it was a camp that worked well. It was pretty much self-governing. It was not in the public attention, however, until the city fathers looked at this land that could be developed for creating an entertainment center, and downtown Tucson, and suddenly the homeless people living there were in the way.
Did you try to get relocation money from the World Bank?
No, we didn't.
It would have been a good idea.
That would have been great.
Or possibly gotten the Yugoslavian government and the Cubans to protest human rights violations.
Well, I think that even closer to home, there's just millions of dollars that go to subsidizing self-serving rich developers. And if we just had a little bit of justice locally, that we would be able to have housing and have a decent place to stay for all of our people.
How long did the camp survive, and how long were you associated with it?
Well, the camp is in an area where there were, if you know Tucson, it's horribly hot in the summer, and so that in the winter it becomes a camp where there may be 80 or so people during the summer months. It dwindles to about 10. And so that had been going on in quite some time.
A couple of years?
A couple of years, yeah.
Were you homeless yourself?
I was not homeless. I've been a homeless advocate. I was the founder of the local homeless coalition. So these things came to us. But one of the things that we're trying to change through a homeless newspaper, we need to get the word out to homeless people that they have a voice, and that instead of having people who just stumble upon the issues that have a voice, and we now we're creating an opportunity for hundreds of homeless people to come and have a voice. They can all be our investigative reporters.
What happened to are there camps now in Tucson, but they're just hiding out, or?
There are camps all over Tucson.
Right.
The majority of homeless people are not living in shelters, but are living in camps. And you name it, wherever there's an area that is undeveloped, a lot of people have found places at the end of bus lines, and then
more outside than abandoned buildings.
More outside than in abandoned buildings. However, there are abandoned buildings where people have been very ingenious in trying to create a safe place.
And we're going to interrupt this interview with Gordon of Tucson from the NASNA convention about the tent city in Tucson to take a live call from Jim Costner from the Elmwood facility in jail. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Robert.
And what's cooking, Jim?
Can you talk a little louder?
Can you hear me now?
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm in Elmwood, and this is my 55th day of custody, and for the case of the Columbus statue, and about 2 days ago, the COs told me that basically they tried to provoke me, instigate me to fight a CO in front of six other COs so that they could pounce on me. And which a CO told me that.
What is a CO, Jim? I'm sorry.
What's that?
What is a CO?
A CO is a correctional officer. He's equivalent to the police officer, only the police officer for the inmates inside any county or state penitentiary inside the state of California or throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
2 days ago, there was an inmate who was going to be released, and he had a few too many Bibles, and about four COs came in, and they do their routine contraband check, which means you're only supposed to have what you're supposed to have, and you're not supposed to have more than one, more than two sheets, or more than two blankets, or more than one towel, or more than one T-shirt, or more than one Bible, or so on and so forth. And this brother, he had maybe three Bibles, and the COs, asked him, where do you get these Bibles? And because it was his release date, he was feeling a little free, and he told them, well, where do you think I get them from, I guess you ask a stupid question, get a stupid answer sometimes. And at any rate, the CO then rolled him up, put handcuffs on him immediately, took him out of the facility, and threatened with, detaining him from being released, in which case, after he was right outside of the hall, I have a bad habit of having compassion no matter where I'm at, and I saw the situation, and I walked over to the CO and asked him if I could ask him a question, and basically expressed to him that I would encourage him to not let his anger get the best of him in the decision making process, and allow this inmate to go, for the conditions in here are miserable and it's a torture emotionally on a day to day level, and that that everyone longs to be delivered from this place, and that that I would really hope that he would reconsider his decision.
Mm-hmm.
And at which point he told me to get the F out of his face. I took 10 steps back. I thought the situation was over. The CO walked outside. The CO came back. He said, "We'd like to speak with you outside." They brought me outside. There were 6 of them outside. The CO basically tried to instigate me to fight him by denouncing me and condemning me and speaking
disrespectfully.
What's that?
Disrespectfully?
Yeah, speaking disrespectful of me. In which case, I just stayed calm and quiet. For it's suicide to fight with a CO inside jail, and it's suicide to fight with 6 people at any time. And so I just stayed calm and quiet, and then next thing you know, one of the COs to the left of him told me that they could wax me in this place if they wanted to. They threatened, one of them acted like he was going to pull off his belt and beat me. Another one, told me that I said I was just exercising my First Amendment. The sergeant of the crew said there is no First Amendment rights in this place, there are no human rights in this place, and you are to submit whatever you're told. At that point, then I was asked to pick up the bag of the other man's properties and possessions and carry it down. They acted like they were going to take me around the corner and beat me up. Instead, they brought me into this little small cell where they kept me for 6 hours, in which case another CO officer came in with the other officer who had the initial issue with, and they told me in no uncertain terms that they could basically do to me whatever they wanted to inside this place. They told me that they could put me in protective custody, and then they could tell everybody else in the barracks that I was staying out for the last 2 weeks that I snitched on all of them, or many of them, so that they would shank me in the yard. They also told me that...
By shank you in the yard, you mean stab you,
yeah,
right?
Stab me, meaning kill me, get rid of me. That was the second threat that I take seriously that they made on my life verbally, what they call terrorist threats. Right?
And what was the first threat, Jim?
Well, the first threat was when the CO to the left of him, or to the right of him, expressed to me that they could wax me in this place. That's a slang term for off somebody, remove somebody from the scene, take somebody out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were in there for 6 hours, and...
hours, and they brought me from minimum security to maximum security, and now I'm in maximum security, and now the CO has brought me up on 3 infractions, and it's amazing that how they, I guess I'm always baffled, and I shouldn't be, because this whole system and this whole country is based upon lie after lie after lie. It's a whole mountain of lies, and I guess I should know that by now, being a revolutionary freedom fighter and understanding the system for many years. However, I'm always baffled at how the liars can look you right in the face and lie to you blatantly. This man tells a story as if he told me repeatedly to step away from him, in which I didn't. He told me, he says that he asked me for my ID, in which I didn't have any and didn't show him any, and therefore those are 2 infractionable offenses, and also questioning his authority is an infractionable offense, which they try to give me. They try to give me 10 more days for each of infraction, so that's another 30 days, in regards to my sentence. But it only counts if I get sentenced, and I'm here in Elmwood for the fourth time incarceration for a charge that I have not been convicted of yet.
You haven't even been tried on it, right?
No, I haven't even been tried. I haven't been to trial. I'm supposed to go to trial 4th of next month. Hopefully I'll be able to get pushed that back a little while longer, because otherwise they have a very strong likelihood of convicting me. They indicted me on a grand jury because they know I have a very good chance of winning my case, because they're going to look very stupid supporting a genocidal maniac like Columbus, and which is what's going to come out in trial. Yet they hope that that it won't be a political trial, and they're going to try to make it a criminal trial and try to pass me off as a hate monger, an insane person, a crazy person, a terrorist, a vandalist, and a burglar, all for removing a symbol of genocide.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you a volunteer attorney, Larry Hildes?
I do, although I haven't spoken with him I've been in custody for a little over 2.5 weeks once again. Like I said, this is my 55th day on this case, and I haven't spoken with him or gotten word through anybody from him, so I don't know where the defense is at today legally, although I assume that he's still representing me, and I hope so.
Well, perhaps you'd like us to try to get through to him.
That would be very helpful, yeah. That would be extremely helpful.
Now, if people want to write you or visit you in jail, what can they do?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have the address here to Elmwood.
Well, perhaps if people call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, we can determine the address? Is there a prisoner number that you need to be written? And do you need some?
There's a PFN number. There's two numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want those numbers, it's 010405 87 DRD 151.
010405 87 DRD 151. Uh huh. Okay, and then for those who want to write Jim Costner, who is the man who, removed the Columbus statue from its prominent hagiographic position there, as in front of the city hall in the antechamber there, and is going to trial for it. I guess your charges have been they've been lessened, but ironically, you have been reclaimed and are being held in jail on the same amount of bail, $35,000, right?
Yeah, the bail case alone in this case alone is a phenomenal travesty of justice, in the sense that it's gone from 4,000 to 50,000 to 20,000 to 70,000 to 35,000 to being exonerated to a new bail of 35,000, which means in our terms that I've paid 3,500 to be out for a period of 2 months.
And unless you do have this opportunity, you're concerned that you're not going to be able to provide adequate defense for yourself, right?
Yeah, if I don't get out of here, the chance of them getting a conviction is probably like 90%, probably 80% to 100%.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we talked about your case a little earlier on the air, and John Thilking is trying to get together bail. We did have a meeting the other day on the issue. I guess
so far we're at $25,000. The bail's bondsman wasn't going to transfer the bond, but yet under pressure by many people called up, which I'm very thankful again to all the supporters and all the people who have been helping and supporting me on this case, that they got him to, they pressured the bail's bondsman to go ahead and take the bail for $1,000. So the $1,000 was raised within, I guess, like a day or two after I was incarcerated. The reason why I've been held up is because they need $35,000 to be put in an account, and they've gotten up to $25,000, so I'm still $10,000 short of being able to be released, and that money is given back. It's a question of trust, which I understand is the more I think about it, the more deeply I understand that that's a lot of trust, you know, because if I don't go to court, then that money is will never be seen again, and that's a lot of money.
For some people, it's their house, which I guess is a concern, you know.
Yeah, so that's why they're doing it this way, and at the same time, I mean, I'm a person who has never caused anybody to lose money in regards to trial, and this will be my fifth case in regards to people co-signing for me, and all four cases in the past have been, or all four different scenarios in the past regarding this case and another case have all, I've always shown to court.
Mm-hmm.
When I had to concern other people, and all I can say is that I have no intention of running, and I will follow this through until the very end, and I do think that they're going to give me the maximum time if convicted. And I, what I understand with that is right now 6 years, 5 or 6 years. It's 3 years for the felony vandalism and 2 to 3 years for the felony burglary.
I thought they dropped the burglary charge.
Actually,
yeah.
They didn't drop the burglary charge. The DA is using a tactical plan in regards to that. When they went to the grand jury, and the reason why it's important that people understand this, if they want to understand the case, is that they took it to the grand jury because they know that I was out, and when I'm out, I'm usually quite busy organizing, and I'm fairly good at what I do, and they're aware of that because I've been doing it for about 10 years, and they know that if I'm out, then the chance of me winning and building defense for myself is very substantial. So they took it to a grand jury, knowing this, and that way they could put me back in jail. And they took what they did when they went to the grand jury. What they did is they indicted me on the felony vandalism, and they tried to indict me on the hate crime. Now, there's a couple factors in the hate crime. I think the basis of why they didn't get the hate crime is because Chuck Afterblock, a journalist from CNN, who interviewed me, said that CNN was definitely interested in my case because I'd be one of the few people on the freedom fighter side or on the left side that would be prosecuted for a hate crime. Now, the hate crime legislature came through. And that was supposed to be for the racists, the fascists, the people who got Matthew Shepard, the people who did James Byrd, those type of individuals who lack humanity, divorced from God, divorced from the earth, and divorced from moral ethics, and who actually find some pleasure in killing people for no other reason than ethnicity and such. And so that CNN, Chuck Afterblock, and CNN were going to take my case, but only if the hate crime was going to stay. So in my opinion, I think that was the deciding factor why the hate crime. Now, they say that the grand jury didn't...
You mean why they dropped the hate crime?
They dropped it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So now I'm looking at these two felonies. Now, the reason why they didn't indict me on the felony burglary charge, and it says in the records, actually, on the DA's reports, is that it was a tactical decision because now they still have the choice legally. Say they took it to the grand jury, and the grand jury didn't indict me on the burglary charge, which is totally whacked out of this world, then they could not charge me with that, and when they go to trial. They didn't bring that to the grand jury on the basis that they know now they have the choice to bring that still against me in trial. So now I'm still looking at two felonies.
So you actually, an additional felony has been added, this felonious burglary, because you carried in a sledgehammer.
It's called conspiracy to commit burglary. So they're even saying that I didn't do anything about
I see. So you didn't actually get away with any pieces of marble from the statue. That
I
maybe
wish I would have, because I would have passed them out to the elders and to the different people.
I see. Well, so you've learned recently that this additional charge actually has been added or is likely to be added.
It's almost guaranteed to be added when we go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
Because my case is a highly political case, and because of who I am and who I've been and who the system is, that there's an open warfare against each other, and that they will give me the maximum time. Mm-hmm. As much, you know, they'll do everything they can possibly do to give me maximum time.
Now, can people visit you in jail?
Yeah, there's been some of the San Jose comrades and been visiting me every Saturday, which I'm very thankful to, and I guess they intend to come visit me every Saturday. And I guess you can have like three or four people. I think it may actually four or five people. I'm not sure totally, but four or five people can come visit at one time. I believe you only get one visit, and it's only on Saturday. So if people want to visit, they should get in contact with Carlos. And unfortunately, I don't have Carlos's phone number memorized, although I do believe it's 408-838-5692. I know some of the movement members over in Santa Cruz do have his phone number. I don't have, you know, everybody's phone number memorized, which I wish I
now, did. Do you have to have people's names on the jail list for them to be...
No, I don't think they do it like in Santa Cruz. I think you just sign up. You can sign up. You call up and you sign up for that for the coming Saturday.
Now, you're actually facing a charge in Santa Cruz as well on August 3rd, right?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be in court on Friday, and I hope that someone's got a hold of the DA. I've tried many people. You were one of them. I don't know if you ever got through to the DA or not.
Well, I left a message with DA Hunt, but he never called me back.
See, I have a horrible feeling that what they're going to do is that they're going to say, which is tomorrow, which they're going to say that I'm not there. They're going to put a warrant out for my arrest, so then as soon as they get out of here, then they can pick me up in Santa Cruz and throw me in jail there.
Now, as I understand it...
if I don't show up to court, the baby's mother is out $500.
This is a charge for failing to pay a fine based on the 1999...
Based on the Santa Cruz 5 case where we were demonstrating
against Yugoslavian bombing.
Which I've already been to jail three times on, and now they want to put me in jail for another time. And it's because I principally refused to pay a $100 fine and do 70 hours of community service for them, because that's what they want me to do for so-called resisting arrest, when it was an unlawful arrest of all five of us. And those people who were there that night, which you were one of them, mm-hmm. know that we were peacefully assembling, exercising our First Amendment, which is guaranteed to us by the Constitution of the United States. And the police department violated those rights and unlawfully seized or detained or incarcerated, arrested, however you want to say it, five of us from the peaceful protest. And now I've been to jail three times on that case, and now this will be the fourth time. So I find it interesting that in America you can be put in jail a multitude of times for one charge.
Now, you also expressed some concern about your well-being. I guess you're in a fairly open cell block. How are your relations with the prisoners in there?
Things have been going good, you know, so far. There was a little bit of an issue with a reactionary individual in another bunker who at one time in the city jail in San Jose told me that when I come to Elmwood that he and his cohorts would basically, you know, have it in for me. And then he actually was, one day I woke up and he was two bunks away from me, so that was kind of that was kind of fascinating. It's interesting how the man operates. And I figured the best way to confront that was to talk with the players in the house, and anybody who's been to jail knows what I'm saying. I don't want to get into it too heavily, jail politics, but the players in the house, and they guaranteed my safety as long as I'm in the barracks before I developed, you know, decent relations with them. And then I went up and confronted the man, you know, openly and said to him, "Do you remember me? Do you remember what you told me?" In which case he started apologizing profusely because he saw the situation inside the barracks, and he realized that he was outnumbered, and perhaps that it would be best for him to, you know, to uh, to, you know, go back on his word. So he did, and that got resolved. Now there's still another individual who has also threatened me from San Jose City Jail, who's supposedly around this camp, and now I'm in maximum lockdown, so I don't think there's too much of an issue there, except for now one of the COs has it in for me. And I just like to mention a couple quick little stories about how the CO tells me that they want me to act like a man and not a boy, and I find it fascinating that this same CO, when they put me in the little cage for 6 hours, they asked me to remove my sandals, and so I did. And when I got out of the little cage, my sandals were different, and my right sandal was about four times the shorter size of my left sandal. Now, if that's not a little boyish games, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the mentality of the people that we're dealing with. And I also find it, I mean, if you were a psychologist, you could have a field day with the penal system, because this man acted so hurt that I would confront him. And I swear to the Creator that...
Which man is this,
Jim? I'm a very passionate man, and sometimes...
I'm sorry, which man is this, Jim?
The CEO.
Uh-huh.
I know I'm a very passionate man, and sometimes I'm maybe even too passionate. But I also know that I have an ability to stay calm and collected and articulate when I need be. And this is the way I presented myself to him. And he took it. It's amazing the hurt that came across his eyes. I mean, you could literally see that these COs, many of them are in so much trauma and pain that their only comfort is in hurting people. And it's really it's a phenomenal situation that this is what they call correcting, you know, crime and rehabilitating the human being.
Any reports from jail that you wanted to let us know about folks inside?
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I could tell you stories all day long. There's an which I know you don't have time for. I'll tell you a few stories that off the top of my head that just strike me as deep. There was an Iranian man who I met on the way to court, and I looked him in the eyes, and we talked for a while, and I believe the story to be true. He was a homeless man. He had an RV, but he didn't have a house, and which many people know about, unfortunately, and you know a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of cats in the RV because he was, you know, he basically, his family was involved in the CIA, and he divorced them because he's a human being and he doesn't want anything to do with the devil. And he's by himself. He doesn't have many friends, and there he is in his RV, and he's registered, he's licensed, and he's insured, and he's, you know, playing the little man's game, and he's got little kitty cats in the van that he's living with. And one day the cops pull him over, and his registration tag has gone expired, yet he's paid his registration, but they haven't sent him his tag, but he has the paperwork that says that he's legal and he's paid, right? But the pigs pull him over because he doesn't have his tag. So the officer tells him, license, insurance, registration, please. So the man hands him his three, you know, ID cards, his little three tickets to freedom cards, and the man says, step out of the car, sir. Next thing you know, his hands are up. Next thing you know, he's being arrested. He's being handcuffed. At the time, he's verbally protesting. Now, this is actually one of the highest bails I've heard of so far in here. He has a $700,000 bail. Now, what they say is that he's being charged with something like 7 to 9 counts of animal abuse. Now, his cats, he says, were all fed. They're all fine. What happened is that when they impounded the car, when they impounded his RV, there are some kittens that were still in the thing that they did not take out. So those kittens naturally died because the man's in jail and the RV is in the impound. So those kittens died. He's being charged with the abuse of those kittens and is bailed at $700,000.
Wow.
So he's looking at spending the rest of his life in behind bars.
We're talking to Jim Costner in Elmwood facility in San Jose. I think we're almost out of time, although they may cut you off at any point, Jim. Is there anything final you want to pass on to us?
If anybody out there has the will to help, if anybody trusts me, if anybody has, knows me or knows about the case, there's a lot of ways that people can help. And at this point, I'm about as humble as I can get. I'm on my hands and knees asking and pleading with people for help. I need some way to get out of this place. It's my only chance to build the fence. I don't know how else to say it. There's people out there who could help. There's people out there who are helping. I'm still short like $10,000. That's a lot of money. You will get everything back. If anybody knows anybody who's in a good, strong economic position who can help out to any degree, you can call. There's a few people you can call. You can call John Thinkling at 475-2757. You can call Greg at 469-0507. You can call Greg or you can call Greta or Meg at 475-8089. I need people to figure out how to get the money together, or figure out a new bail bondsman with a different scenario, or someone that's willing to co-sign it as property, or something to that effect that I really need to get out. I know that's probably what everybody says in jail. I don't really know how else to say it. That's the truth. If I don't get out of this situation, then the chance of me being convicted is very high. I would just say in summary or in conclusion that this society is totally evil, that this empire is perpetrating warfare against people throughout the whole of the planet, I'm living in a present internment camp. It's not that different than Nazi Germany, except for the people here aren't being exterminated on a mass level, but we are being incarcerated on a mass level, and this is the steps of Nazi Germany, and that this system has ultimately been at war for 500 years with natives and Africans and oppressed nationalities, and the whole of the working class is under exploitation and being oppressed, and the lies and the propaganda and the media are colossal, and it's an ongoing nightmare. And I would just pray and hope and encourage and suggest to people that the only way we're going to get out of this is if we stand together and we build a movement and we build a family and we build a universal, international revolutionary liberation movement that ultimately delivers all of us from this evil nightmare and ultimately puts the nightmare to rest, and that I pray that humanity will recover itself and treat each other as the human beings that we are, and that human rights be the law, and not the system of oppression.
Well, thank you, Jim, and I will pass on this information. People have missed these numbers. Give a call to 423-HUFF. We've been talking to Jim Costner inside the lockup, maximum security over in Santa Clara County. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for accepting the call.
Sure. Free Radio Santa Cruz. I've only got about 10 minutes left on this show. If you want to call in and talk, 427-3772. Here's a story from Berkeley. No one gets arrested for this, by Ken Moshesh. Actually, it's about Ken Moshesh. It says, staff writer Ken Moshesh wins a precedent-setting ruling for homeless citizens, July 17th. He's a staff writer for Poor News Network. Activists and advocates from Berkeley's Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, BOSS, the Homeless Action Center, and Poor Magazine gathered at the Berkeley Municipal Court several Thursdays ago, hoping to witness a long-awaited ruling. They were there to see if California Code 647J, the law that makes lodging on property without the owner's permission illegal, would be found unconstitutional. Judge Brosnahan ruled that in Ken Moshesh's case, use of 647J was unconstitutional and that it could not be applied.